So the data that I'm going to show you today is from an experiment that we undertook last year with the idea of just trying to understand a little bit about whether or not we could actually even understand microbial community responses using a proteomic method. So it's really kind of fitting for this particular symposia, Do Omics Hold Promise for Greater Understanding of Soil Microbial Ecology? Just so I don't forget, let me mention my co-authors. One of them is a PhD student in my laboratory, Ms. Maya Mula, and another one is Ms. Erin Taylor, who is now the University of Mississippi School for Medicine. So really, in terms of what my lab's focus is on this type of research, is my long-term goals really are to utilize metaproteomic methods to understand lots of community function questions. Of course, right now, our current state of the art and science is that we can do a lot of microbial community analyses, but we yet cannot do a full range of functional characterizations, which in the end can be argued are more important than actually knowing who is present. In particular, water stress and water effects are something that are very important to me. We tried some experiments looking at water stress and so forth in soils. We didn't have good experience with that, so we ended up backing up. And then the same would be said for looking at carbon processing. So those are our long-term goals, of course. So based on some failures we had in those experiments, backed up a little bit and said, okay, can we just carry out some basic proteomic questions? And of course, why do we care about proteins? Well, they're direct expressions of cellular function. In the end, I think a lot of times that's really what we're more interested in, is that functional process connection rather than just the organisms that are there. Of course, the organisms that are there when we're doing pyrosequencing and such are extraordinarily important studies as well. But if we're trying to understand how that community composition translates into function, I think the proteomics methods do have some merit. So can ecologically meaningful descriptions of microbial processes be inferred? That's my low bar that I've set, but I think it's an important bar to set for the talk today. Analysis of proteins, we can kind of look at this from two vantage points. Simple one being an ideal method, which it looks like Janus group is converging on something there a little bit, where we extract and characterize many of the proteins. Of course, all would be the ideal. I think we all understand being able to quantify a representative fraction, if not the entire fraction, would be ideal. That's the same goal we have if we talk about DNA analyses and so forth. Understanding a little bit about up and down regulation, knowing which proteins are expressed versus those that are not expressed, though that's key information. On the other hand, really what we're dealing with is the reality of they're difficult to characterize, they're difficult to extract. Proteins interact with soil colloids, soil particles. They're difficult to remove from the soil. It's very difficult to know what the source is. If you do a direct extraction from soil, you don't know for certain if those are actually from living microorganisms. They may actually be something that's still stranded in the soil and has not decomposed, for example. Just trying to separate different proteins. This gets into more of an analytical question of being able to try and say to yourself, can we actually identify more and more and more proteins over time? And then rare versus common organisms. We tend to think of dominant organisms as carrying out the bulk of the processes, but if we think about it, in soil, most organisms are not dominant. And the collective action of those rare organisms could theoretically be more important than the action of, say, a few dominant organisms. With proteins, this is particularly a concern. We know that we can get some maybe perhaps larger metabolic well-known proteins out, but can we begin to get some of those rarer proteins? That's another question. So with that in mind, we decided to carry out an experiment on a sandy soil, lower organic matter, something we felt that we could actually begin to have an effect on the microbial community. We used a pretty large sample, 50 grams of soil, and we asked the question, if we added two different types of carbon, would we see the production of new proteins versus that in an unamended soil? We chose toluene and glucose because we knew we had a lot of reference information in the database about how microorganisms already respond to these. And glucose, that's true as well. Several response variables in addition to the protein data, fatty acids. We used fatty acids to give us an idea of how microbial cells might actually be responding. Fatty acids are good because, for example, toluene has a very strong effect in microbial cellular membranes, so that would give us an idea of whether or not we were actually having the intended effect, say, from our toluene addition. We isolated microbial cells. Now, in the end, what we found is that we didn't have very good luck extracting proteins directly from soil. We could get maybe, you know, 8 or 10 proteins out if we ran, say, an LC-MS, MS-DSI method. So instead, we focused on doing a Nikodenza density centrifugation step where we tried to remove the cells from the soil particles and the soil organic matter and separate them out that way. And then we also looked at the effects under culture. So we have a glucose, toluene, and an unamended, and then we have extraction from soil, from isolated microbial cells, and from culture. So for protein, we also did an SDS page. We wanted to actually continue doing a gel-based method at this point because we knew that we could send these samples and do, say, an LC-MS, MS-ESI, but you get a lot of information by actually running a gel and trying to understand which proteins you're picking. And I'll show some of that data in a minute. So we did the protein extraction from soil, from isolated microbial cells, and also from culture. And then we also did bacterial, looked at the different types of bacteria, just doing a basic extraction and looking at the 16S ribosomal RNA genes. Just some expectations to make sure you're on board with where we were going in our logic for this. Proteins extracted from soil should reflect amendments of toluene, and that's what I'm going to primarily focus on today. Our glucose results also tended to show that we had positive effects on our protein composition based upon what we'd expect. Today I'm going to primarily talk about toluene, and we're going to use the literature as our comparison and also some of the cultures that we grew ourselves. We looked at cellular PLFA, and we expected exposure to toluene, for example, would increase membrane rigidity as a response to the actual toluene moving into cell and solubilizing. The increased rigidity helps to fend off, so to speak, the effects of the toluene on cells. And so we expected a couple of changes, an increase in the saturated to monounsaturated ratio, and then an increase in, say, omega-1 sevens to the 17 cyclo, as has been documented in the literature, basically making lipids, fatty acids that are more rigid. And then we expected there to be a strong selection for bacterial dominance, particularly under the toluene treatment. The literature says, basically, the types of proteins we might expect to see, and so this is our other test, are there certain proteins that we expect to see increase in our toluene samples? Outer membrane proteins have been shown. Another protein known as TALC, which is another type of outer membrane protein. OMP stands for outer membrane protein. We also expected that if there was actually any metabolism of the toluene, there's several different types of oxygenases that are utilized. One in particular is 2,3-dioxygenase, but actually, we didn't find any of the oxygenases that actually indicate toluene breakdown. So in the end, that point is moot. But we did look for those. And we also looked for response and rigidity due to Pseudomonas acidida. We liked toluene because we expected, because Pseudomonas is an organism that you can find in the database, it would be a good one that we might expect to also see. So we could have a lot of information from the databases to give us an indication of whether or not, say, Pseudomonas, for example, was the organism that is responding in our soils. It would be a good reference organism for us in our study. So some initial results that were interesting to us was that we really had a difficult time extracting from unamended soil. Now, this data is from our extraction of microbial cells. These cells have been separated from soil. And what we found that even if we took cells and extracted them for protein, in our case, we still had a very difficult time. Look at this lane up here. We still had a very difficult time getting those proteins out. Now, if we came in and we put an S. multifilla into the soil and then extracted them out as well, we got nice banding patterns. And of course, this is just a 1D. We didn't try the 2Ds. It was a little bit difficult for us at this point. We didn't have a proteomics expert helping us out on that. But what we found basically was that this increased, of course, our ability to extract it out, the proteins out. But whereas if we didn't amend the soil, even though we got a pellet, we did not see good protein banding patterns. Now, if you go and you add glucose, and even more so if you add something like toluene, you can see sort of a pattern here that under toluene we're seeing much, much better banding patterns. And of course we didn't add, in this case, this is pure soil microbiota. There is no addition here. There's no S. multifilia added to this particular. So this is all organism protein from organisms that have been exposed in soil. With glucose, we had a little bit of a problem as well. And I guess the question becomes is why is that? And if you look at this data here, there could be, I guess, several possibilities. One we expect is simply that because we're getting such great dominance here in this toluene system, and we have the 16S data to back that up, that maybe it's just easier for us to get direct extractions of those expressed proteins, whereas over here we're getting perhaps such a diversity of proteins that maybe they're not showing up as well in particular banding patterns. If we go back and ask the question, are the microorganisms in the soil where we've amended the toluene showing indications of increased rigidity as we expected under toluene? Basically, we saw that yes, indeed, toluene increased the ratio. In this case, I'm showing you data for the ratio of the saturated to monounsaturated, but the other index that we were using previously, the 16:1 omega-7, to that of the precursor cyclopropyl 19-O also showed similar results. But basically an 8 to 10 times increase in the rigidity of the cell membrane based upon the fatty acid ratio here in the toluene samples, particularly so for the soil-extracted microorganisms. If we look at this from just the soil standpoint, we're still seeing the same response, even though we weren't able to get proteins out from a direct extraction. And we can see the soil-extracted microbes that we sort of biased our extraction by extracting those organisms that could be centrifuged out, saw an even greater response. And then we also have the soil-derived cultures. Yeah, I didn't explain much about how the cultures were grown. Really don't have a lot of time, but basically these are organisms that were selected to grow under toluene. It's a much different experiment in a lot of ways than just adding to the soil, because in soil, of course, they hadn't been exposed to toluene before. In culture, we're actually growing them up from the get-go with toluene exposure. So there's differences there, but nevertheless, we did see a bump, a significant bump in that ratio, which is what we would have expected. So we've established that certainly the microorganisms are responding probably to toluene. We're seeing a huge change in the microbial community, in particular the Firmicutes. And this is actually in opposed to our hypothesis that we might expect to see a lot of Pseudomonas, simply because those are the ones that are the most well-studied. Those are the ones that have been shown, particularly in a Nature paper, 2 decades ago, that Pseudomonas putida types are good at withstanding stress to toluene, in some cases actually able to metabolize it, and many other types of solvents. In this case, actually, the organism that really came out were the Firmicutes, particularly two types of bacilli. So that was interesting to us, simply because we said, well, you know, we expected this organism that was well known to toluene degrader to give us some information, and that would even help us with our protein identifications, because our protein identifications, as Janet mentioned, are really going to be dependent upon our backup gene data that we have in our databases. So nevertheless, even though this didn't quite bear out, we still found that we were able to extract proteins out. Okay. We were still able to extract proteins out. And here I just want to give you an example. I know it's a little bit difficult to read, but this particular data set tells you a little bit about the type of information you can get if you do an experiment, plus you can compare it to, say, for example, your gel-based method. So if you come in and look particularly at the chaperonin data, chaperonin protein, we get data on the molecular weight of that protein. You can compare that to your gel and say, well, did this protein actually come off at that particular place that you would expect based upon the size of that protein to help you confirm its existence? I'm losing my, there we go. You can also get a little bit of information about the abundance. It isn't a perfect method, but based upon peptide count abundance, you can also tell a little bit about the relative abundance of, say, a particular protein. And here, Pseudomonas fluorescens, most of our organisms were matched according to Pseudomonas, not Bacillus, even though that's what we found to be the most dominant in our 16S data. We found that Pseudomonas was a dominant organism. So there is some ability, particularly in the future, I think as we get more data, to use this also as a method, of course, as phylogenetic classification. And you can also get information about the biological process and, of course, the cellular component. I don't have time to go into detail, but in a lot of cases, most of our proteins came from the cytoplasm. Basically, the key idea here that I want to get out is that I think we did support our hypothesis that we were supposed to see toluene response to our communities. Basically, in our two toluene treatments, even though we saw a total of 45 proteins at the 95% confidence interval and probably hundreds at the 90 or 85% confidence interval, we found several types of proteins tend to reoccur. And if we looked in the literature and compared the presence of, say, these glutamine synthetase, these outer membrane proteins and so forth, four were exact matches. These are transporters that we think would be responding to help transport that toluene, for example, out of the cell. Of course, we have some other proteins, too, these stress proteins, superoxide dismutase and chaperonin. Chaperonins, in particular, are important for protein misfolding. We expected to see those. They're almost ubiquitous in most toluene experiments where they've added them to either cultures or in cells. We didn't see them in our cultures, but we did see them in the toluene-amended soils. Glucose, we saw just real generic energy transfer metabolism and so forth. And I'm only showing you a snapshot of some of the proteins here just to give you an idea of how they differed. The glucose-amended soil was completely different from that of the toluene-amended systems. And so it confirmed our expectations. My last slide here, I just want to wrap up. Basically, what we found was that we had 47 proteins identified at the 95% confidence interval. If you went down to about the 90 or 85% confidence interval, we got several hundred proteins. These proteins in the toluene soil or in the toluene culture were dominated by outer membrane proteins. These were autotransparent Porter barrels, tall C, which is almost ubiquitous in many systems in the literature for microbial bacterial responses to toluene. Lots of different variations in your OPF, OPA, and OPR porin proteins. All of them gave indication that what we were seeing in our system was, in fact, what the literature would suspect that we should be detecting based upon our toluene amendment. Glucose amendment, on the other hand, was completely different. They were general function proteins. There was really only eight total proteins that we could get out with 95% confidence, closer to 40 or 50 if we went down to 80% confidence. But all of them were still closely related to metabolism as opposed to, say, upregulation of TALC, OMPEP, and some of these others for transport of toluene out of the cell. So basically more answers than questions, excuse me, more questions than answers. I wish I had more answers, more answers than questions, but that's not the case. We saw response to carbon amendments were consistent. There really was no evidence, however, for growth on toluene. We think the best explanation right now for, say, the increase in the bacilli under toluene addition is perhaps cryptic growth. A lot of cells were probably killed during the addition of the toluene, and we see a partial response to not only undergoing toluene stress, but the increase in carbon amendments and so forth in our proteins. Our proteins indicated that with lots of translation proteins upregulated. We still have to ask the question of why there are fewer proteins under glucose than our toluene amendment, and why is it so difficult to get proteins out of cells that have been Nicodin centrifuged, pelleted, and bound, but still have a difficult time finding banding patterns. That's another question that we have. I think proteomics has a powerful potential in soil microbial ecology. Of course, we need better extraction purification methods. I was glad to know, I'd be glad to look at the paper that Janet's group came out with here recently. That's exactly what we need, are these some methods that we feel good about extracting proteins out. Of course, as we get further down the road, the availability of gene expression data, genes and gene expression data, microorganisms, those reference strains has been mentioned several times, will be key. They underlay the foundation of proteomics. So even though proteomics, I think, is our functional characterization, that's going to be very, very important for understanding microbial community responses. It has to be underlain by that basic metagenomic data. With that, I'll end. Thank you.